a roundup of the main business news from China and elsewhere. This is Global Business.
From CGTN headquarters in Beijing, this is Global Business. I'm Guan Xing, the headlines we're tracking at this hour. Sustainable transformation. China celebrates Arbor Day by implementing green initiatives to revitalize land and boost the economy. Boosting growth, U.S. President Joe Biden proposes an ambitious federal budget of $7.3 trillion to drive economic growth and address key priorities. And population potential. In our Beast Focus series, we zoom in on the potential of China's silver economy as the aging population expands rapidly. China's top legislature, the 14th National People's Congress, wrapped up the week-long two sessions on Monday. Chinese Premier Li Qiang said last Tuesday when delivering the government work report that the country is dedicated to adopt a low-carbon economic model and to create a healthier ecological environment. Today, the country celebrates its 46th National Tree Planting Day. According to a recent report from the National Greening Commission, China has planted nearly 4 million hectares of forest in the last year, an increase from the 3.8 million hectares of afforestation achieved in 2022. Additionally, in 2023, the country also restored more than 4 million hectares of degraded grassland and treated about 2 million hectares of sandy and stony land. For decades, soil erosion has been a serious problem along one of China's longest rivers. A law introduced nearly 1 year ago provides environmental protections for the Yellow River Basin, and Zheng Songwu travels to Shanxi Province to see the progress that's being made there.
Around 700 kilometers of the Yellow River flows through Shanxi Province and the vast Lois Plateau in northwest China. China's government has made it a priority to address severe soil and water loss in the region and protect the river environment. One of the most common measures to control land degradation in cities across Shanxi Province is planting trees. Planting trees on the west bank of the Yellow River is no easy task. The slope is steep, but what's more challenging is the widespread bush like this one, with long and sharp thorns, and people can easily get hurt while passing through those, not to mention planting trees. One of these trees weighs 5 kilograms. Each one has to be carried up the bare riverbank to areas that can only be accessed on foot. The stones carried by these workers are used to contain the soil in which the trees are planted. More new trees have been planted across 3,000 hectares of land along the riverbank since the Yellow River Protection Law came into effect nearly 1 year ago.
The law has encouraged us a lot in further protecting the river. The central government also has offered us the fund for more projects of Yellow River protection, so we can spend it in planting more trees.
Official data shows that two decades ago, around 800 million tons of soil was washed into the Yellow River in Shanxi Province every year, increasing sediment levels. Now it's less than 300 million tons. The Yellow River Protection Law is also helping raise environmental awareness in local communities.
Whether for entrepreneurs or individuals, their awareness of protecting the river has been raised. We've also found that in the procuratorate or court system, cases related to ecological protection in the Yellow River are increasing. Judicial authorities are providing a better legal guideline to regulate people's behaviors, which is a very good legal framework.
Shanxi Province has also introduced an environmental protection law for the Weihe River, the biggest tributary of the Yellow River in the province. It's yet another milestone in efforts to protect one of the world's longest river systems. Zheng Song, CGTN, Yan'an, Shanxi Province.
Now for more insights on China's ecological development, we're joined by Wu Changhua, chair of the Governing Council of Asia-Pacific Water Forum. Thank you so much for joining us, Ms. Wu. So what are the main highlights of China's National Afforestation Report, and how do they contribute to the goals of ecological civilization of China?
Thank you for having me on the program again. And the latest report released today pretty much made the highlights of the key milestones of continued progress made in China last year, particularly through newly added forest land, which is about 4 million hectares, and plus, of course, the other efforts in terms of restoring degraded grasslands, as well as treatment of desertified lands and other land-based ecosystems there. And this is an important milestone in a way because China has pretty much set a very clear roadmap, a pathway along the line of ecological civilization. About a decade ago, when China first put forward this guiding, defining national strategy of development, there are a few key elements in it. And the number one actually is called ecological red lines or ecological boundaries there. Along that line, particularly in the decade efforts in terms of really understanding, defining and drawing the ecological red lines, national government has set clear targets in terms of afforestation, land restoration, ecosystem restoration, as well as many other efforts there. Policies, laws, regulations are put in place. So against the backdrop of those national goals and the targets, so the efforts made last year, as highlighted by the report released this year, definitely it shows China is on the track towards actually delivering, achieving those set of targets, so that we'll be able to really approaching the harmony between man and nature by mid of the century.
And that concrete efforts has been made. And why has the strengthening of ecological civilization been given priority in this year's government work report?
Well, 2024 means we are at the very end of completing, the 14th five-year plan, which is, by the end of next year. If you look at 2021, 2025, during these 5 years, China has set a very clear national target. For instance, we said by 2025, the national forest coverage rate should achieve 24.1%. Interesting enough, China hit that target a year ago at last year's Arbor Day, reached about 24%. As the report highlighted this year, that we're already adding another 4 million hectares of forest land to the list. And so we're definitely overachieving that. But in the meantime, China continues to face a lot of ecological crises, including pollution, land degradation. Still we have a lot of damages, destruction to the existing ecosystems there. So more urgent than ever, we need to, not only recognizing the progresses, but in the meantime, really understanding what are the root causes still remain, barriers remain, so that we'll be able to really address them, not only achieving the targets set by the end of 2025, hopefully overachieving that so that we set on a solid foundation to achieve midterm, longer term targets.
Mm. And given so much challenges ahead, what specific initiatives are undertaken by China for the protection of the ecological environment?
There are probably plenty examples there. As I said, the national plans set out, the goals and targets. In the meantime, really started rolling out a major project initiatives there. Just to give you probably two short examples there. One is called Beautiful China. So this particular initiative was first put forward about a decade ago, and earlier this year in January, this initiative was further upgraded, elevated, really becoming a national guiding strategy towards achieving the ambition and the goals of Beautiful China. In that context there, not only addressing pollution issues, but more and more towards building, restoring nature, restoring ecosystems there, not only land, but ocean as well, so that we'll be able to really build this country and develop our economy, socioeconomic, the growth on solid foundation of ecological health or ecological civilizations there. So China definitely is on the track. Another example is really around the legislative effort. You mentioned early on the Yellow River Protection Law, which is a major highlight, which happened about last year, adding pretty much to the list of more comprehensive legislative framework in terms of protecting the nature, conserving ecosystems there. So now China not only have this national law to protect the environment, but more and more so actually about protecting key ecosystems along the Yangtze River, the Yellow River, Qinghai Tibet Plateau ecosystems there, as well as the northeast region around the black soils there as well. So now the legislation pretty much covers very comprehensively all the key ecosystems in China. As I said, this pretty much helps put the country's future development solidly, on the harmony between man and nature.
Well, thank you so much for sharing with us. We appreciate your time. And that was Wu Changhua, chair of the Governing Council of Asia Pacific Water Forum, for us. And now we are heading for a short break. Still to come on Global Business. Boosting growth, U.S. President Joe Biden proposes ambitious federal budget of $7.3 trillion to drive economic growth and address key priorities.
The world economy as we know it is about to change. Global Business reports highlight emerging markets, developing countries, and dynamic sectors worldwide. We feature top analysts and newsmakers to provide perspectives on every facet of business. From an on-the-ground perspective, we provide you with balanced and objective assessments. Fast, sharp, and insightful. Global Business. Only on CGTN.
And now turning to the U.S., President Joe Biden has proposed a new federal budget of $7.3 trillion, a plan that would hike taxes on billionaires and large corporations to pay for programs which would cut costs for families. The proposal calls for raising tax receipts by nearly $5 trillion over 10 years, and that includes over $2.7 trillion in tax hikes on businesses and nearly $2 trillion on wealthy individuals and real estate. The budget will also assist moderate-income families with housing credits and expanded tax credits for children and health insurance premiums. In addition, the White House says the proposed budget would reduce the country's deficit by around $3 trillion over the next decade. China's annual government work report highlighted the country's intention to enhance pilot free trade zones and give more autonomy to such zones and Hainan Free Trade Port to promote the high-quality development of foreign trade and investment. With the upgrading and implementation of the free trade port policies, Hainan's export-oriented economy has boomed.
Currently, the Airbus A321 aircraft from Vietnam's Vietjet Air is undergoing maintenance services in Hainan, China. This is the first aircraft maintenance order received by the Hainan Free Trade Port from Vietnam.
Since the operation of the one-stop aircraft maintenance industry base in 2022, we have received many orders, serving clients including Royal Air Philippines, Cambodia Airways, Qatar Airlines, the world's largest leasing company AerCap, and Ireland's aircraft leasing company BBAM.
One key reason as to why overseas airlines and enterprises choose to have aircraft maintenance services at the Hainan Free Trade Port is that they can enjoy preferential policies such as exemption from paying deposits for inbound maintenance and tax exemption for refueling.
In 2023, Hainan restored and opened 50 overseas passenger and cargo air routes. Throughout the year, it opened two passenger air routes and operated two cargo air routes exclusively under the Fifth Freedom of the Air program. In 2024, the province plans to resume up to 66 overseas air routes and strive for a breakthrough in the Seventh Freedom routes in the first half of the year.
Hainan, with its preferential policies and geographic advantages, focuses on building two bases, the headquarters space for Chinese enterprises to go global and the headquarters space for foreign enterprises to enter China, facilitating export while attracting investment.
A company primarily exports tilapia fish to more than 50 countries around the world, mainly Europe and America. We exported nearly 200 containers in January and February. Compared with the same period in 2023, the overall export value and volume have increased by 20%. Customs clearance in Hainan is more convenient and efficient.
In 2023, the province's paid outward investment for the whole year approached $3.9 billion US dollars, a year-on-year increase of nearly 105%. there were 21,400 newly registered foreign trade entities in the province, a rise of 49.4% year-on-year. Lin Wo, Sansha Satellite TV in Hainan for CGTN.
In the first episode of CGTN's The Forefront, where we explore stories of China's governance with ministers and governors. And Feng Fei, secretary of the CPC Hainan Provincial Committee, talks about the development strategy of this island in the south.
Hainan was founded for the important purpose of establishing a province-wide special economic zone. We are currently accelerating the construction of a free trade port of Chinese characteristics with world influence. In recent years, to promote high-quality development of the economy, we are breaking away from the dependence on real estate. Instead, Hainan is accelerating the construction of a modern industrial system characterized by the four pillars, three strengths, and three premium service sectors. The goal is to increase the quality, resilience, and competitiveness of Hainan's economic growth. The four pillars refers to the four leading industries, including tourism, modern service industry, high-tech industry, and tropical agriculture. They account for 62.4% of GDP, an increase of 11 percentage points from 2018. The three strengths refers to leveraging the advantages of Hainan's climate temperature, ocean depth, and geographic latitude to develop seed breeding, deep sea, and aerospace industries. And the three premium service sectors are high-end shopping, medical service, and education, where we hope to lure back outbound consumptions.
Whether it's about your education, the home you live in, or the items you buy, your money has a story to tell. Because every business story is a human story. Global Business.
With more than 280 million people aged 60 and above, accounting for nearly 20% of the total population, China's silver economy has witnessed remarkable growth in recent years. Our reporter Xu Yi discovers how China's aging population is ushering in a golden age of silver spending.
Wearing this aging simulation suit, I'm now looking at an older version of myself. A slower body, waning senses. Well, at this moment, I start to get afraid of aging. But everyone gets old. Nowadays, the world is graying faster. By 2030, one in six people in the world will be aged 60 years or over. And China has one of the largest gray-haired populations in the world. And the increasing skill of this group creates great potentials of silver economy. And it is expected that by 2035, the scale of China's silver economy will reach about 30 trillion yuan. Businesses are already starting to develop different products and services to meet the needs of these silver spenders. But the first thing entrepreneurs need to do is understanding them. The aging simulation suit I showed you earlier is to allow people to better understand seniors. Many institutions and enterprises will use this to develop better services and products for seniors. And senior living products have become one of the pillar industries for silver economy in recent years. According to China's Ministry of Industry and Information Technology, in 2023, the market size of China's elderly products will reach 5 trillion yuan.
In Guangdong province, there are nearly 27,000 enterprises operating senior living related business, and Younger Life Senior Living Products Coordinated Limited is one of them.
Exoskeleton legs, singing diapers, shower machines. When I tried some advanced products for the seniors in this company, I realized that a new chapter has really begun for this industry.
Since 2012, they have developed more than 2,000 kinds of senior living products and provided products to nearly 1,200 nursing homes in the country.
In recent years, they have produced more creative and smart things for seniors.
In addition to products, renovating homes for highly aged people is the key to the comfort and happiness for them.
Cheng Pengju is a 90-year-old man living alone in Shenzhen. Following combined efforts of the enterprise and the local community, the quality of his life has greatly improved. And local governments are also offering support to promote senior living industries and services. In 2016, the Shenzhen Municipal Government supported the establishment of the Shenzhen Nanshan District Elderly Care Promotion Association to promote the development of a local elderly care service system that is home-based, supported by communities, and supplemented by institutions. With the improvement of basic life facilities, the seniors have more leisure time and spiritual demand. In recent years, the elderly care tourism industry has also experienced vigorous development.
Sandy beaches, lush tropical greenery, fresh air. Sanya is on everyone's to-go list for a holiday, especially in the winter. In recent years, an increasing number of older tourists have been flocking to this beauty spot, and many seniors currently travel south for the winter and return north in the spring. We call them Hongniao Laoren, who, like migratory birds, travel to improve their health and well-being.
And in the senior living community in Sanya, I also have experienced one day of their lives.
From 8 a.m. to 8 p.m., senior people here have packed schedule every day.
Now I'm heading for the morning exercise. The class will start at 8. I think I need to move faster. Let's go.
I even feel like I was back to my high school time. And service workers in this community spend the most time with the elderly after their children. The two young workers here are with their senior friends, making this place more homey. As of 2023, the demand for elderly care workers in China has reached 6 million, and the related practitioners have increased from 300,000 in 2021 to 500,000, but still far from the demand. But there's still more young people to devote themselves to old age care.
As of today, Hannah has 20 authorized integrated medical and nursing care institutions, which is of great significance for silver economy. And travel agencies in Sanya are also creating various tourism packages for the elderly.
On January 15, in 2024, China State Council released a document to improve the well-being of the elderly. This is the first national document to support the development of the silver economy, which will also boost related industries. Actually, talking about the elderly involves everyone. All in all, what we can predict is that China's silver economy now and in the future will provide the gray-haired population with golden years. And now, I want to ask the question again. Are you afraid of aging?
Not anymore.
And now for more discussions on China's silver economy, let's talk to Shi Xuezhu, assistant professor at the School of Insurance and Economics of UIBE. Great to see you again, Professor Shi. So many countries faced the problem of aging society earlier than China. Let's take Japan, for example. What industries are emerging in Japan due to the country's rapidly aging population?
Yeah, you're very correct. So the in Japan, the aging process is like 30 years of before us, and is now around one-third of the population are aged above 65. So the emerging economy in Japan, of course, is the healthcare and also medical and old age care related, such as nursing house and also medicines industry for sure. And also what's more interesting is the manufacturing industry is also rising in Japan to match with the government's idea for the industry 4.0. So they have very high-end industries such as robots for caring needs and also for the future shortage of the labor. And also they are having a great sharing economy in Japan as well for better allocation of the resources and also for innovation, especially to create a caring idea within the societies in Japan.
Mm. Yeah. One unique phenomenon in China is that Chinese grandparents often help with grandkids. Are there any needs that are not being met in this country?
I think there's a lot of needs like mismatch from those who are taking care of their grandchildren and also what we should do in our society. So first, there are two types of the elderly taking care of their grandchildren. The first type is they actually leave away from their original places, like their birthplaces, and living with their adult child and also their grandchildren in big cities such as like in Beijing and Shanghai. And I think for their need, of course, first is the medical need, because previously our medical insurance cannot carry around across the provinces. But recently, this interprovincial medical claim has achieved and have helped with this need. And furthermore, they are actually have a lot of social need. Well, they need to make friends, and because they do not know anyone who living in this big city, so they probably need to make friends with other elderlies among within their neighborhood. And the second type of these elderlies is those living in the rural area with their grandchildren only. So this type of the elderlies who are taking care of their grandchildren actually have a lot of mental health need and also the health care need. And they have a lot of concern in terms of their mental health and also health. So I think in terms of that, our public health system should provide more support to these elderlies in the rural area. So that's basically my ideas on the support that we have to need for the need for the elderlies.
And Professor Shi, do you think China could see the development of some unique elderly care businesses?
Oh, yeah, sure. I think first we have to use our unique government system, because we have this called neighborhood committee, which is Zhuweihui in Chinese. I think you guys all know that. It's a special organization in China. So I think they should take up the responsible for neighborhood-based or even home-based old age care in China. But that is more from the public finance point of view. But from the private industry, as the previous clip showed in the news, we need to create some digital or smart neighborhood. So together with 5G or 5.5G and also the sharing economy in our country, so we can create a lot of like home automation and a smart home for the seniors, and also some app and also the monitor system designed for monitor the danger situation for the elderlies, and also for taking biological measures such as if the elderlies have high blood pressure or high blood cholesterol, and it will report directly to the nearby medical institution, and then they can get treated or they can get rescued directly. So that's probably the new digital economy from the private side that can be in use for the elderly society.
Well, thank you so much for sharing with us. And that was Shi Xuezhu, assistant professor at the School of Insurance and Economics of UIBE. And that will do for this edition of Global Business on CGTN. I'm Wen Xing in Beijing. Thank you for being with us. Stay tuned.